something, Representative Doherty, they don't work.
Are you allowed to give that kind of response, Greg?
I'd like to open the House Committee on Business and Labor. Good morning. Wednesday, April 29th. We've got a long agenda, and we're going to start out by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 574A.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure requires a person providing restoration work on residential or small commercial structures following a disaster to have the appropriate license endorsement from the Construction Contractors Board. It directs the board to adopt rules for issuing this residential restoration contractor license endorsement in time to make it available by January 1 of 2017. There are no amendments, there's no revenue, there's a minimal fiscal impact, and the Senate vote was 29-0.
Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Holby, committee, I'm Deb Boone for the 32nd District. And as I told my partner here, he's going to do the heavy lifting and details and take all the hardball questions. But I just wanted to say this 574 is a good bill. I'm a part owner in a construction company, and we have to be licensed, bonded, and insured to do the work. And we are aware of when things happen, a fire or an earthquake or a tornado, even in Oregon anymore, causes damage to structures. People need to rebuild, and if you come home and find your house on fire, and that's just such a trauma anyway, and then there's somebody there to say, here, I'll take care of it for you, just sign here. And, some of these people operate like ambulance chasers, and I just think that this was a great idea. Somebody brought it to me in the summer and asked if I wanted to hear more about it and be on a committee or work group that would be discussing this for this session, and I agreed. And I think I attended two meetings, but I was kept up to speed on it, and it's developed very nicely, and I think that it's a good idea, and it's a good consumer protection bill, if you will. So there, in my area, just for an example, we have one company that's legit and three or four that show up when things happen. So the one person who, and it's not all the time, and it's not all pleasant work. There's a lot of, you can imagine murder scenes, et cetera. So this is an important business entity to have in communities, and I just want to make sure that they have a fair playing field, and I would urge your support.
Thank you, Chair Holby, committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in Senate Bill 574. My name is Alan Olson. I'm a senator representing Senate District 20, which is the heart of Clackamas County. This bill came about, Senator Shields and I talked about this. Actually, he was the mover and shaker, if you will, because of, I believe it was a constituent that had a firm come in because of a catastrophe and was going to provide services, and contractual agreements weren't met. So the current concern we started to talk about was the fact that these, as Senator or Representative Boone said, these ambulance chasers come in, and they, while you're dealing with a catastrophe, they're standing right behind you saying, could you sign this contract? We can clean this up. We can make this better for you. As a personal experience, my sister's house burned down. I got there within 25 minutes of the fire starting, and there were already three different groups there providing or trying to provide services for my sister as she's watching her house burn to the ground. So the concern was that these folks, A or One, were providing services that contracts were signed under duress. And there was no real agency behind it to protect the consumer. And one of the things, as a general contractor, one of my concerns was is that these companies were coming in and not only providing board-up services and vacuum services, clean up the water, get rid of the smoke, but they started to provide structural construction services by repairing walls that were damaged, headers, and things like that. And that's in the purview of the Construction Contractors Board. And to do these kinds of jobs, you need to be licensed by the CCB. And so we talked and put together this work group and came up with this bill, which is a very good bill, passed, as you said, from the Senate unanimously, that provides that if you're going to come in and do just general cleanup, board up, and protection, you will not be licensed by the CCB, but if you are going to provide structural work and repair fire damage, water damage, etc., you needed to be licensed by the CCB so that we had a clear and concise trail as to contractual obligations and an opportunity if things went south, that we had the CCB as an agency to back up and say, hey, wait a minute, we need to protect these consumers. That's the, I guess, the premise of this bill and why we think it's a good bill, because it not only allows companies to come in and do what they're supposed to do, which is clean up fire damage, but when you need to repair the building, then those people have to be licensed by CCB. That's why we ask for your support, and I'll take any questions.
Questions? Representative Kinnamer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, is there a provision regarding the homeowner themselves making these repairs?
No, there's not, because, I'm sorry, Chair Holvey. I'm usually on the other side and don't have to do this. Chair Holvey.
Yeah, we don't see you over here very often.
That's right. So. Vice Chair Kinnamer. The homeowner can do his own work all the time.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
I just wanted to verify that yes. was accurate. Thank you.
Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought it was illegal for anyone to hire out and do any structural work whatsoever in the state of Oregon unless you were a licensed contractor. So,
Chair Hovey, Representative Escobar, you're exactly correct. But these companies that were coming in and doing the cleanup, they were expanding what they can do. They would take out, remove records, take out household goods, and then they would go in and they just kind of expanded into, well, I can fix that wall, or I can repair this, and I can repair that. And the contracts were really not clear as to what their work scope was, what the full charges would be. This bill puts it into the perspective that now we have an agency that can go back and say, wait a minute, you've stepped beyond your grounds.
Follow up. So this pertains to organizations, and we have legitimate ones like Service Pro, people like this, but this pertains to people that do similar work only under different names, and they're like you call ambulance chasers.
Right. Chair Holvey, Rep. Escobar, yeah, exactly correct. And I believe Service Pro is licensed and bonded with the CCB. And those companies that are reputable follow all the rules, and they do what they need to do, because if they want to expand their scope of work, they need to be licensed by CCB to make these repairs.
Mr. Chair, could I add to that?
Mm-hmm.
We're Representative Holvey, Representative Escobar. The construction contractor issue, they are by complaint driven only. So if somebody screws up on the job, so to speak, if these people do something and say, you know, my famous one is drilling a hole in the wall to put something in, and you haven't checked what's on the other side and it causes quite a bit of damage, and then you say electrical or something like that, and they call in and they say, oh, whoever's doing this work is, and then they report them. And then they check to see if they're licensed.
Other questions for this panel? So I haven't totally looked at the bill quite yet. I apologize. But I do remember Senator Shields bringing this issue up last session. And I think it was unanimous out of the Senate then as well. But ran into some trouble with the contractors and some other groups. And not exactly sure if that, we'll find out if that conversation has progressed a little bit, and it sounds like it has. And so looking forward to hearing from some more people on this. And I hope the Construction Contractors Board is here. I don't know if they are, but.
Chair Holvey, they were in all the work group meetings.
Mm-hmm.
We had CCB representatives there the entire time. My concern as a CCB contractor was that we're protected, and you know, we even defined restoration work and what it means and what you can and can't do. So, thank you for
your
time.
So can they demolish and take out sheetrock and replace sheetrock without a contractor's license?
Well, it says, Chair Holvey, restoration work does not mean the repair or replacement of physical components of a structure. So they can't take the sheetrock out. That has to be a licensed general contractor or a subcontractor.
Carpet as well, probably.
Carpet is real, you know, typically you don't need a CCB license to replace carpet. Most carpet installers are licensed, but you can take it out and put it back yourself. So someone, a restoration contractor, can remove wet and destroyed carpet, but because it's non-structural.
So they're not likely to have consumer complaints about the installation of carpet, is what you're telling me?
Right.
Okay.
Can I have one question?
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do they need a license to do this work here, just the restoration repair stuff? So down on line 25, it says the board may issue a licensee an endorsement as a residential restoration contractor. So do they still need a permit to come in and do this kind of in-between work?
Chair Holvey, Rep. Barreto, no, they wouldn't need a permit to do a fire cleanup, board up, fencing, water damage control. They wouldn't need a permit for that, but once you get into the construction side of it to repair the building, then you'd need your permits and everything applicable for CCB.
Okay, follow up?
Follow up.
So all this does then is prevent them from going further than that?
Yes. Okay. Sorry, Rep. Holvey. Representative Barreto, basically what it does, it says, you know, if you're going to do this business, ServPro, be reputable, take care of your clients, and if you can't take care of your clients, we have a resource, which is the CCB, to make certain that we can come and have the estate agency go back and say, wait a minute, you're doing this wrong. That's the whole purpose of this, is the ambulance chasers.
You follow up?
Follow up.
But you're still going to have those ambulance chasers coming in, though, just to do the cleanup stuff. This isn't going to stop that. Is that correct?
Well, Rep. Holvey, Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, it probably will not stop them, because just as we have unlicensed contractors that do work, it's complaint-driven. But the thing is that if a homeowner signs a contract and says, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to use you, they have the authority of the state behind them to say, we can back out of this contract and not have to take your services.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey, I think that a lot of cities have business requirements, business license requirements too. So there's a little layer there. If you're going to operate inside a city, you have to have a business license. And I think that's a first stop. But this really is to protect the consumer from someone who, you know, may get in over their head in that sense. And I know there's a caveat emptor quality to this idea, but it's, people are under duress and stress when they're in a situation like this, and they get taken advantage of. And so this is also a good bill in the sense what Senator Olson was saying, how a contractor has to be licensed by the CCB to do that structural work. And I know that our company works with our restoration person, and they will get on site and they'll say, whoa, this is beyond my scope of practice here, and call their contractors for, you know, to bring it in and do the work, the structural work, after they're finished or with them or whatever.
Was there really another follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that really brings up a good question, what you just said. You know, so do contractors out there have these ambulance chasers that go out and say, I'll clean up this place, and then I've got a contractor here that I'll recommend to do this work?
Rep. Holvey, Representative Barreto, I don't know. I'm sure they can in some instances, but, you know, a contractor, and here's one right here, licensed, bonded, and insured, has their name to protect, and they don't want to be working with a shady deal. And I think that, and I don't remember the exact details of how this bill came about. Senator Shields probably could tell you better than I can. But somebody was not happy with what happened, and when they followed it back to see how this, you know, occurs, and it's like anything. You look in there and you think, I see one ant. Oh no, there's two. Oh my God, there's a whole, you know. So it's not a new thing, and it's not an individual case. They're everywhere. And contractors, in my purview, and from we've been in business since 1974, and it's very important, especially in rural areas and small towns, to keep your name good. And so you would not associate yourself with a shady deal. I mean, you look for someone who's got a license if they're required to and operates legally. But you're absolutely right. I'm sure somebody said they could come, and they do. And so it's up to the homeowner to choose the right person, I guess. But, you know, they'll have, as Senator Olson said, they have the protection of, you know, the contract itself and the CCB, or the, yeah, CCB behind them to help them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Widener.
Representative Boone, would it be safe to say that you're an ambulance chaser or sometimes even beat the ambulance to the scene?
I have a pager, yeah. Now, I've been known to Representative Holvey, or Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, I've been known to get to the scene about the same time as those people, but for a different purpose.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The good part about this is with you have a CCB license, I can go online and I can tell you everything about what you've done, what are the complaints, ones that are settled, ones that are not settled, and it's a history of the contractor, and that's why we actually started that. So I'm happy to see us incorporate more into that.
Chair Hovey, I'd like to add to that a little bit. I can actually get an endorsement added to my license that I am allowed to do restoration, which would go in and do cleanup, water cleanup and stuff like that.
So do you know if in the work group they discussed some of the perhaps the steering that goes on with insurance companies saying you need to use this restoration company? And
could we bring Amanda up? And because she
well, if you don't know that, I'll ask her when she does come up. I have to get provide an opportunity for another representative to speak.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
So we'll find out more about that later. It's always been a peculiar thing I've heard from contractors who, and homeowners alike, who've gone through fires and things. They get into these sorts of scenarios, and it's like they really don't have a choice who does the work. So that becomes sometimes troubling. But when you really look into it, they do have a choice. They just come away after talking to their insurance company that they, you know, they're really going with one person. Well, otherwise, the insurance won't pay.
Chair Holvey, I would suggest in my personal case with my sister, within a day I had the thing fenced off and we had it all cleaned up in a week, and the insurance company, there was no discussion. I mean, of course, I'm a general contractor, so they didn't have a problem. But I would assume that any contractor could come in and do this work and the insurance company would follow through with that without, you know, steering to particular cases. Because I don't know many general contractors that actually specialize in cleaning up burned down buildings.
All right. Thank you. We're going to temporarily close the hearing on Senate Bill 574A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 699.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure broadens the exemption to provisions regulating cosmetology disciplines for those who prepare individuals' hair for professional photograph or theatrical performance. Declares an emergency, and there is a proposed -1 amendment that is just clarifying that the exemption applies to those that are styling a temporary hairstyle.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Holvey. Excuse me, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jennifer Williamson. I represent House District 36. For those of you here in 2013, you may remember the hair and makeup bill. It was a bill that allowed for hair and makeup artists in film and video to practice their craft without going to cosmetology school. So we're here today to put the hair in the hair and makeup bill. Currently, the law was an oversight in drafting, I think, by me. You can just comb hair and apply hairspray right now under the current statute if you are a hair or makeup artist who has not gone to cosmetology school. This bill would allow people to do things like put their hair in ponytails or use bobby pins, because currently that's illegal. So Selena was my constituent who first brought this whole issue to the forefront, because it's been a concern as our film and video industry grows that there are professionals who practice this craft, particularly in Los Angeles and places in California where the rules are very different, and they were finding it really difficult to come to Oregon and to practice what they had been taught in maybe an apprenticeship or something in California, because we had such strict rules about what you could and couldn't do if you had not gone to cosmetology school. So that's what this bill does, and I'm going to turn it over to the experts.
You want to go?
You want to tell first?
My name is Charles Carlson, Representative Rolby, Representative Kennemer, and members of the committee. I'm the business agent for Local 488 Film and Video Union. If I'm not mistaken, we'll be in film today, and I'm about to be a victim of a crime.
Oh, no. I should introduce myself to you. Good morning, Chair Holby, cool. Members of the committee. I'm Selena Rubin. And so he wants me to demonstrate for you. Okay, this is legal. You can do this. But this is illegal to put a ribbon in a
room. Okay? I can see why.
So.
That was great. That was outstanding.
Look, I just told to do it. We don't always like what we're told to do.
That's true.
But so I wanted to bring up the point of the expectations of a makeup artist in this state is that we also have to style hair or we won't get hired. So because of the budgets in production, whether it's a photo shoot or a film production, they just don't have the budget for non-union productions, which are all photo shoots and a lot of the independent film scene in Oregon. They don't have the budgets to hire a separate hair person and makeup person. So they always expect a makeup artist to do hair. And if you can't do hair, then they won't hire you. So it just kind of negates the whole point of the last exemption that we made to cosmetology, so makeup artists can make a living in Oregon. If we can't do hair, then we can't make a living. So it's really necessary to add that as well, to make it clear that we can style hair.
And Chair Holby, in front of you is a -1 amendment that makes it very clear that this is only for temporary hairstyling. Anything that's permanent, you have to go to cosmetology school or hair school in order to do that. So we're making it very clear it's only temporary.
Thank you. Questions?
I don't know. It's a tough bill.
So will this allow somebody to apply chemicals to the hair, as in perms? What about color?
Perms are permanent, Chair Holby.
Well, not always.
When done correctly.
You're not going to win this argument, Chair Holby.
You have not seen Chair Holby in the 60s and 70s.
No, seriously, I was just kind of curious if it's really defined, you know, where you're legal and where you're not legal. And so is that what the -1 amendment? Because as I'm reading the regular bill, it says you can do anything to the hair.
-1 says only things that are temporary.
Okay. Temporary hair color? Semi-permanent?
Semi-permanent is as past permanent. But if you, this would perhaps allow us to like do like spray on that washes off with water. That doesn't permanently alter the hair.
I was just seeing if I could trick you guys.
No, you can't.
Representative Holy and members of the committee, I think it's important to note that these people travel the world in their craft, and they can't have these licenses and permits for every state that they go to, because a lot of times it's short notice, and people come here with the same expectation of being able to work. So
right.
This just keeps Oregon in line with the rest of the states.
And I suppose, you know, the people that you do hair on and everything probably sign waivers that hold you harmless in what you may do to their hair. I mean, I don't know if you've had your hair done particularly, but
I wouldn't say, I mean, there's a lot of different levels of production going on, so I wouldn't say that it's always the case that there is, you know, a waiver. I don't think it's necessary because we're not doing anything permanent to the hair. So, like, if we're going to put a braid in the hair, I don't think anybody needs to sign a waiver for that. I mean, unless they don't like the style and want to sue us.
Yeah. Okay, well, Representative Doherty.
Well, so basically, you know, more on a serious note, so basically what this is the idea that you're doing no color, you're doing no cutting, you don't have a pair of scissors in your hand, you don't put dyes, all that kind of thing. Basically, you're getting a comb, you're getting a brush, you're styling somebody's hair, you're putting things in their hair.
Accessories.
Which,
yeah.
By the way, the ribbon did match your glasses, so I thought that was very good. And so that's the sort of thing, and those are the sort of things that should not require the kind of schooling that the rest of a hairdresser is requiring in Oregon.
Right. I mean, I don't know how much time they spend on just the styling portion, but there's a whole lot more time in cosmetology school that is unnecessary for makeup artists.
Right. Okay.
Very expensive as well.
Right.
And I was going to, as a follow-up, it's if the actor doesn't like the hairstyle, they don't care. It's the director that cares. So, right.
Just do what we're told.
Don't see any other questions at this point. Thank you very much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
So, Matt, let's see who else. Is Cynthia Ryder here?
Yeah.
Right? Seriously.
You can come up and Matt Marquis.
Is Matt going to comb hair too?
Mostly it's the right music. Nobody ever did out all that.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If you would introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Cynthia Ryder. I'm the executive director at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland, Oregon, and I'm just here in support of Bill 699. This exemption is really important for the same reasons you hear about. We do have hair, wig, and makeup artists on staff at the festival, and so it's very important for us in terms of this work. We'd actually like to see you make the bill even better and broaden the exemption so we could have our staff do things like trimming mustaches, trimming haircuts, because actors are in shows for up to 9 months a year there, and their schedules don't fit with regular salon hours. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing the Association of Cosmetology Schools. We are neutral on the bill as drafted, but are in support of the -1 amendments just to clarify the temporary hairstyle. And while everybody here that has testified is definitely well qualified to do the things that they do, I just want to point out that the exemption does also go into the field of professional photography, and I think anybody could go down the street and open up a shop of to do photography, and the same exemption applies, and I do believe that the word temporary is important. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Josh. Questions, Representative Kinnemer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt, what about the notion of modest trimming of hair and mustache, facial hair, I guess, and that kind of thing? It seems like you know, particularly in the Shakespearean Festival, where it's over an extended period of time, you want your people to look probably the same each time.
Mr. Chair,
as I recall this morning, it takes regular attention.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kinnemer, I completely understand what you're saying. There are some issues around safety and sanitation that I think need to be addressed just to make sure, again, the people that we're talking about here in the room today, I think, are probably definitely qualified to trim somebody's mustache. I'm not so sure, though, that the guy that opens up the shop down the street to take someone's photograph is. And so I think that would need to be addressed because it is all in the same exemption within the legislation.
So if I'm understanding you correct, Mr. Marquis, that if we were to broaden this out to allow the theatrical side of life to be able to do hair color, for example, as long as it's not permanent hair color, we wouldn't want to expand further into photography.
No, Mr. Chair, I think that is correct. And I think that probably as drafted, if it's not permanent hair color, it probably is included already.
Okay. Thank you. Don't see any other questions? Thank you very much for coming all the way up from the Shakespearean Festival as well. I know it's a little bit of a drive.
My pleasure.
Are you aware of that?
I'm aware of that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Me. Oh, thank you, too, for coming.
Yeah. Is actually, that in Oregon?
You're actually closer.
Well, yeah, a whole 15 minutes.
I should just thank you on Mondays, probably.
There you go.
So with that, I'll, was there anybody else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 699? Not seeing any. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 699. And what was our time constraint?
You want it to be called tonight.
We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 371.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure clarifies the notice of closure procedures for workers' compensation cases, and it requires the insurer to mail a copy of the notice of closure to the worker's estate in the event that the worker is deceased, and it permits mailing to the beneficiaries of the estate, establishes the right of the beneficiaries of the deceased worker to request reconsideration of the notice of closure. It allows the beneficiaries who were not mailed a copy of the notice of closure 1 year to request reconsideration. Mandates that the insurer pay the cost of necessary interpreter services for the reconsideration proceedings, declares an emergency. There are no amendments, there's no revenue, there's no fiscal, and the Senate vote was 30-0.
Thank you. John Schultz, please. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of Department of Consumer and Business Services. Under existing workers' compensation law, an insurer or a self-insured employer is required to mail a notice of claim closure to the worker, to the worker's attorney, and to the director of the department. Under this bill, if the worker has died before the claim is closed, a copy of the notice of closure must also be addressed to the estate of the deceased worker. The bill also gives the insurer or self-insured employer the option to mail the notice of closure to any known or potential beneficiaries of the deceased worker. Currently, case law has interpreted the statute to allow the beneficiaries to request reconsideration on a notice of closure. Reconsideration is requested when there's some disagreement either by the worker or their beneficiaries with the notice of closure itself. And that can be over the amount of temporary disability that was provided, or it can be over the amount of permanent disability that the worker is awarded. This bill codifies the case law interpretation. Under the bill, any beneficiary that's not mailed a copy of a notice of closure has 1 year to request reconsideration of the notice of closure. Any beneficiary that's mailed the notice of closure has 60 days to make that same request. The bill also allows the beneficiaries to pursue a request for reconsideration that was filed by the deceased worker before the worker's death. This bill also addresses a provision around interpreter services. Under current law, some interpreter services are specifically required to be paid for by insurers. However, there's a question whether depositions during the reconsideration process are to be paid for by the insurers. This bill would specifically require insurers and self-insured employers to pay for an interpreter services for a worker's deposition in a reconsideration proceeding. The Management Labor Advisory Committee reviewed this bill, and they recommended it for support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions I can.
Thank you. Why don't we have Susan come on up as well, where we ask any questions.
Thank you, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. Good morning. Susan Graby with the Oregon State Bar. Steve Schoenfeld and Mike Orlando could not be here at the last minute, so I am here on behalf of the Workers' Comp section of the Oregon State Bar, who brought 371 to the legislature this cycle. It has passed the Senate Judiciary Committee unanimously, the Senate floor unanimously. Management Labor Advisory Committee does support it. And we urge your aye vote. I'm happy to answer questions. I can go into more detail. The bill does two things. It provides, it requires payment of deposition, interpreter services and depositions, and it also requires notice be given to beneficiaries of a claimant. And I think those are the most important pieces of the bill, and we urge you to support it.
Thank you. Questions from this panel?
I have a comment, Chair, if I could.
Representative
Evans. Just a quick comment. I want to appreciate the fact that the interpreter, God bless, interpreter services are included. My dad has been involved in the science and related speech therapy hearing actions for the last 40 years. And I know that there's a lot of changes going on within the deaf community in terms of technology really impacting that culture, which has had a result that there are fewer interpreters available for those that actually need it throughout the country because many folks have new technologies that are not related. So I think this is going to be a really important service for folks, and I'm glad that it was covered. Thanks for doing that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Not seeing any right now. Thank you very much. Representative Kinnamer, your question?
Just a comment. We've been looking closely at bills regarding MLACs, weighing in at least, and thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you, Representative Kinnamer. We definitely wanted to make sure it went through the Management Labor Advisory Committee before it went through the legislative process, or at the same time at least.
So when did the MLAC look at this bill and approve it?
Mr. Chair, do you have the exact date? Because I was going to say I don't.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, I have a document that states October 14th, 2014.
Quite some time ago.
Yeah. It was quite some time ago, Mr.
I didn't
Chair.
See it on any recent agendas. So. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 371. Let's go back and reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 699. Did we do this? Was John going to speak on that one too?
That was
291.
I'm sorry. That's the one we just finished. Okay. I misled you. So you want to close the public hearing on 291.
Oh. Mm-hmm. John, were you here on another bill as well? I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 699 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 291.
This is the measure that modifies circumstances under which an injured state worker has the right to reinstatement or reemployment, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. I guess we'll have John Schultz, Penny Evans, and Deb Bogart. I hope I read that correctly. Sorry for the slight bit of confusion. We were trying to accommodate schedules here and didn't realize John was here on two bills. Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. My name's Penny Evans. I'm the risk manager with Department of Administrative Services Risk Management.
Chair Holvey, committee members, I'm Deborah Bogart. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services Risk Management Program as well, and here to present Senate Bill 291 for you today. John, you want to go on ahead? Or?
Sure. I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. I'm also here about Senate Bill 291.
So whoever would like to lead off, please do.
I think that would be me. Chair Holvey, committee members, Senate Bill 291 involves the reinstatement and reemployment of injured worker statutes that are under BOLI. There are basically two sets of laws that deal with injured workers. The ones that most people are familiar with is workers' compensation statutes under ORS 656. But there are also some BOLI rules from the Bureau of Labor and Industries under ORS 659A. The statute we're looking at particularly is 052, but they're closely linked to ORS 043 and 046, which deal with reinstatement and reemployment of injured workers successively. Reinstatement is the placement of an injured worker back into the position that they were working in at the time of injury. Reemployment deals with placement of an injured worker in a position other than the job that they were injured in. 052 is an addendum to those two statutes that apply specifically to state workers and only state workers. The statute 052 basically provides that injured workers have additional rights to reinstatement, reemployment, and those additional rights pertain to placement in an agency that's different than the agency in which they were injured. It also directs Department of Administrative Services to adopt administrative rules that pertain to those two different issues. The statute was last revised following passage of House Bill 2778B in 2009. After that passage, DAS adopted its policies for reinstatement, reemployment. Those two administrative rules deal with temporary placement of injured workers and the permanent placement of injured workers in other agencies. The policies basically state that, they use a hierarchy of placement for an injured worker once they begin their recovery. First, you look at the position in which the injured worker was injured and look to modify that. If you're unable to modify that position, then you look at another position within that agency that the worker might be able to perform. If you're unable to do that, then you look outside that agency for placement of the injured worker in a position. The difference between the temporary and the permanent is that placement in another agency on a temporary basis is optional, but is a requirement under permanent placement. So basically what happened is 2 years ago we had a claim filed against the state that challenged the statute and that the injured worker, it was interpreted that the injured worker was entitled to permanent placement in another agency when they were only in temporary status. That portion of the lawsuit was dismissed before it entered into court. But in the interim, DOJ, Department of Justice, took a look at the alignment between our policies that we adopted as directed and the statute as it was written wasn't quite clear on this subject, and they advised that we should come and see if we couldn't align them a little bit better. And so that's basically what the bill is about.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, John Schultz with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. This bill doesn't change the general right of an injured state worker to request reinstatement or reemployment. The bill clarifies that the injured state worker's right to be reemployed in another agency within the same department only applies if all of the worker's permanent restrictions are known. Typically, those permanent restrictions are going to be identified when the worker's claim is about to be closed. The Management Labor Advisory Committee reviewed this legislation and also recommended it for your support. And again, I'd be happy to answer any questions I can.
Thank you. No.
I'm mostly here for her.
Just back up. Any questions on this bill for this panel? Not seeing any. Thank you for the historical review of and description of the bill. Is very helpful. Was there anyone else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 271?
Oh, yeah.
Or 291, excuse me.
Whoops.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mary Botkin with Absentee Council 75. We originally introduced the bill requiring the state of Oregon to reemploy their injured workers and find suitable work for them when they were injured on the job. I told the department I'm trying hard not to hate this bill, but I believe that it actually does continue to do what was in the spirit originally. We had experienced extreme difficulty with the state of Oregon in accepting the responsibility for reemployment of their injured workers. And that's what brought the bill about to begin with. I believe now that the state is working more diligently at finding positions for individuals who have been injured at work. And if they do not continue to do so, we will be back. It is just abhorrent to me when somebody is injured on the job and an employer the size of the state of Oregon contends that they cannot find any suitable work for that person if they're not able to return to their previous employment because of restrictions. The state of Oregon's a big employer. There's lots of jobs, and they ought to be able to find work for everybody who's injured if they're able to go back to work. So with that, we are certainly fine with this bill, but I think it's important that the committee understand that the state of Oregon has not always been a stellar employer when it comes to accepting their responsibilities.
Thank you. Any questions?
I am.
Representative Esquivel?
Not really a question. It's just, Mary, that it's hard for me to fathom that the state of Oregon hasn't woken up to the fact that if you keep someone working in a productive manner, you're better off than them than paying for the workman's comp. I mean, that's beyond, it's hard for me to believe that. And what do we have, 50-some thousand workers, positions?
Sometimes we have to force people to see the obvious, and there's been changes at DAS since we experienced these problems, and it is my hope that with those changes and with the passage of our bill originally and the changes in this bill that the state of Oregon will continue to be a better employer, if not a great employer.
Well, I certainly think that's the hope for all of us, and we like to think that we do a good job of employment, but we definitely need to address
they need
issues.
A little extra guidance.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 291A. And now we will reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 699.
We're done. That was a hearing makeup.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senate Bill, close Senate Bill 699. And we've got too many marks on this. And reopen Senate Bill 574A. There. Boy, a little slow this morning. Amanda. And do we need to call somebody up? via phone. Good morning. This is Paul Holvey. I'm chair of the House Business and Labor Committee, and I assume you're Matthew Stimley.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
I hope I said that right. So we are in a public hearing on Senate Bill 574.
Yes, sir.
And so we have some written testimony for you, and I think we'll go ahead and let Amanda from Senator Shields' office kick this off a little bit, and then you can follow up with your testimony after she's done.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you. For the record, my name is Amanda Hess, and I'm the chief advisor to State Senator Chip Shields, who represents North and Northeast Portland in the Oregon Senate. Thank you for hearing this bill today. I think that the Senator Olson and Representative Boone did a great job of laying out the problem. Senator Shields asked me to read his testimony into the record. I hear now he's stranded on Highway 22 with a flat tire, so I think that's karma, but I will read it. Senator Shields states, Chair Holvey and members of the House Business and Labor Committee, thank you for taking the time to consider Senate Bill 574A. The bill puts restoration work resulting from disaster clearly under the licensing authority of the Construction Contractors Board. I'm happy to be joined today by Senator Olson and Rep. Boone, who also chief sponsored the bill. For those of you not familiar, restoration companies restore property damaged by flood, fire, and unexpected, unfortunate circumstances. There are a lot of good restoration companies providing valuable services in the state. I, for one, experienced their value firsthand when my pipes broke on Christmas Day last year. A company came out and helped my family put our home back together. This company was, and many other restoration companies are, already CCB licensed. However, there are a growing number of restoration companies in the state that are flying under the radar and preying on victims of disaster. My office first found out about the problem after a five-alarm fire in our district when concerned constituents brought to our attention a company that solicited work as they watched all of their belongings burn to the ground, got them to sign a blank check contract, and misled them about what could be covered by insurance. One of my constituents submitted written testimony today to that effect, which I've asked the committee administrator to upload to OLIS. After the incident, my staff followed up with the fire chiefs and firefighters associations to see if this was an isolated incident. The resounding answer was no. These predatory practices were an increasing problem around the state. This all may sound familiar to you because we brought this issue forward in the 2014 session. The Senate passed SB 1571 under broad bipartisan support, which would have allowed consumers an unwaivable right to rescind a contract made under duress. During the process of that bill, many restoration companies reached out to my office to relay their support for clamping down on what they saw as new predatory companies that would listen in on scanners to chase fires and harass victims. Some of these companies have submitted testimony today. Prior to a couple years ago, they said that the norm had been for the victim to call their insurance company to get connected with restoration work, or if they were uninsured, to check out services once they had had a chance to emotionally collect themselves. However, new fire-chasing restoration companies were now increasing in number and negatively impacting the livelihood of traditional good-acting companies. SB 1571 did not move out of the House, however, because of legitimate concerns from the contracting community and the limited time frame of the short session. In response, we set up a work group with the contracting community, including Michael Eliason, Kate Newhall, and Ryan Tribbett. The Firefighters Association and Fire Chiefs, the Construction Contractors Board, Senator Olson, Rep. Olson, and Rep. Boone to address the issue. Senate Bill 574 is the result of the work group. CCB licensure will provide needed oversight of fire-chasing restoration companies that use predatory tactics on consumers. It ensures that consumers have a place to turn to if they feel they are being mistreated by a restoration company. And most importantly, CCB licensure ensures that all restoration companies are bonded and insured, conform to contract language requirements aimed at protecting consumers, and participate in contract dispute resolution. I will also note that we worked with Director Deno at CCB to amend the bill in order to fulfill the request for a little more time to prepare for implementation. The bill passed the Senate unanimously. I urge the committee support of SB 574A in the House, and thank you for your time. Senator Shields.
Thank you, Amanda. And Matthew, you could go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, sir. This is Matthew Steinway with Kennedy Restoration. If it's all right, I would just like to read a prepared statement.
That's fine.
Excellent. My name is Matthew Steinway, and I'm the sales manager for Kennedy Restoration here in Portland, Oregon. By way of introduction, Kennedy Restoration is a full-service restoration contractor serving the Portland metro market since 1950. We're a third-generation family-owned business that focuses on restoration only. We do not do new construction or remodeling. Kennedy Restoration has purchased a non-traditional franchise called 1-800-BOARD-UP. 1-800-BOARD-UP does not chase fires, but works with the fire departments to help the victim and secure the structure if needed, along with other services. We only respond when called directly by the fire department. This service hopefully allows the victim time to deal logically instead of being preyed upon emotionally by the fire chasers. We try and educate the victim on what to do or what may happen after the fire is out. Most chasers use fear and emotion to get the victim to sign with them. They say things like, your insurance company sent us, or this isn't going to cost you anything, or a friend of yours sent us to help you, and many more. Then they present the victim with a highly inflated invoice for services, sometimes for services not even needed, and without regard for any policy limits the customer may have within their insurance policy. Insurance companies cannot stop chasers, as they often are not even aware of the policyholder's loss until a few hours after the fire event. We take our responsibility very seriously and have become increasingly frustrated on what is happening out there. We therefore fully endorse Senate Bill 574 as it is currently written. Mandating a proper license through the CCB is a positive step towards protecting the consumers currently being taken advantage of by unlicensed predatory entities. We very much appreciate the opportunity to speak and welcome any future chances to do so. Respectfully, Matthew Steinway.
Thank you. Is there questions from the committee for Amanda or Matthew Steinway? So I was curious about, I guess, the connection between the insurance company and the restoration companies and the representation that somebody would make, I guess, in this time of emergency that they are from the insurance company or the insurance company sent them. Is, if that is not true, is that statement illegal under this bill or any other statute that you know of? Is misrepresentation, I guess.
Yeah, I. So Amanda Hess, again, for the record. I would also guess that it was fraud, but I don't know from a legal perspective. This bill, I mean, you'd have my assumption is that you'd have a right of action if it's if they're saying fraudulent comments. But I think what the most important thing that this bill does is that. For folks that are not doing it, puts it under CCB licensure so that you have to sign a contract that has the CCB license number, and and you have a remedy with CCB if they make comments like that. So you wouldn't necessarily have to hire a lawyer to go up in court against that person. I mean, it might still be helpful, but you'd also have the CCB there to look at the contract language and make sure that they're making claims that were accurate. Hmm.
And Mr. Kennedy, do you know if it's legal for an insurance company to require that somebody who's gone through a fire, for example, to require that they go with a particular contractor, or does that happen in insurance policies?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I don't know an insurance company being able to actually mandate which contractor works for the customer. They typically make it very clear that the customer or consumer has the right to work with whoever they choose, and then they ask that that individual or entity simply work with them to work through the reconstruction process, the emergency services process, to come to agreements about what needs to happen, what should happen, and probably most importantly, you know, what would be a reasonable price to do that particular scope of work.
So you're not aware of an insurance company saying, well, you need to use this contractor if you want us to pay under this policy?
That's correct. Usually what they wind up doing, if the consumer doesn't know who to contact, we are a very, very specialized industry. A lot of people aren't even aware that we exist. They don't know what to do when a fire occurs in their house, and what the insurance companies try and help with. And that is by saying, here are three names or five names that you could pick from. And typically that's what they'll do with the consumer.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one curious question. I think you said you get a call from the fire department when there's a fire and when the services are needed. Do they call you directly? Do they call a variety of restoration companies, or how does that work?
They do call us directly. There is a switchboard that they are in contact with, and how it works is we're basically on a round robin system, very similar to, you may be familiar with, the police department calling for a tow truck. The tow truck companies that respond to the police department's phone call are vetted. They're checked out, licensed, background checked, that sort of thing. The very same situation exists with various fire entities around the state, where they've got a list of vetted contractors that they've been working with, that they trust, and we are called on a round-robin basis.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much, Mr. Steinle. You're welcome to stay on the line if you wish. We have a few more people yet to testify, or you can hang up and be on with your day. Your choice.
Okay. Thanks very much. I'm going to hang up now, but thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
No problem. Happy to have you.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Amanda. I think we have a couple more people left, Mike Eliason and Bob Livingston. And Ryan Tribbett.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, Mike Eliason with Associated General Contractors. Mostly here to speak in support of the process that led to where we are today. When Senator Shields introduced this bill in the short session last February, we had some significant issues with the bill, but he was good enough to put together the sort of informal work group over the spring and summer, and we had a good discussion, worked through a lot of different issues, and I think came up with a kind of a narrowly targeted solution that should work just fine. So just want to speak in support of that, and in the interest of time, I'll stop there, but willing to answer any questions.
Ryan Tribbett here on behalf of the National Electrical Contractors Association. We also participated in the working group that took place. We shared a lot of the same concerns that AGC and some of the other contractor associations had with the way the bill was originally drafted. I think the process was very good, working with Senator Shields' office and Amanda specifically. Always felt like they were forthcoming with information and amendments and really did care about the concerns that we had and did everything they could to address them. And they did address them, and that's reflected in the bill before you. So it's our association is neutral on the bill, but it is a good bill. It was a good process, and you should feel comfortable in voting in the affirmative.
Chair Hovey, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I've just a couple of points to make with over 20 years of experience in the fire service. One, this is not a problem that's unique to the metro area. As I checked with fellow colleagues throughout the state, this is a problem. There is predatory practices out there, but point two, there's also lots of reputable companies that do good work and essential work that assist homeowners and occupants that have, you know, devastation and trauma that occurs when any type of fire or a flood or any type of other disaster occurs for them. And so we think this bill's a good bill. It's a consumer protection bill. It will assist us primarily in allowing us to focus on doing our job, and certainly we can't control people that are not that are outside of the fire ground perimeter, which is another reason this bill is good. And the final note that I'd make is just really not only to thank Senator Shields, but certainly Ms. Hess for the really a whole bunch of work that she's done, putting the work group together and coordination of efforts for those that are involved in those type of processes. That's a lot of work, and she did a great job. And so with that, we're proud to support this bill and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Barton.
Mr. Livingston, do you think Senator Shields' testimony was in fact written by Senator Shields?
I take the fifth.
Chair Holby, Representative Barton, that's good advice from the other vice chair. I'll take the fifth on that.
Thank you. Other questions? Other question maybe can be addressed by the Construction Contractors Board, or maybe Amanda. I sent you to the audience too soon, but I was kind of curious whether when the bill talks about what restoration work is and isn't, you know, it talks about components of the structure, that replacing or repairing components of the structure is not restoration work. So I'm curious if the CCB actually has a list of, you know, what that is, you know, specifically, because when I think of carpet, for example, and it's okay for them, evidently is not a component of the structure, but I also have, you know, known consumers to, I think it has, you have to have a construction license, contractor's license to install carpet. And so it would seem like it would fall that would be a component of the structure that would need a CCB license and not to be able to do, because I've had consumers complain about, you know, quality of installation on carpet and having trouble getting that replaced. Did that come up in the work group?
This is Ryan Tribbett again. Specifically, I can't recall if carpet came up. There was a lot of conversation about what, in defining what a restoration contractor would be able to do, in both defining what those activities were and what they were not. And from our perspective of representing the Association of Licensed Contractors, we wanted to make sure, and the agency was confident under the structure of this bill, that the way they were going to follow it is what it is not is anything in the definition of what a general or specialty subcontractor would do. So in the definition of what would qualify as work and require a license for a residential specialty contractor or a general contractor, that is what they would consider work outside the scope of a restoration contract. I don't know if that contains carpet. I don't think it does.
Mike, do you have any comments about that?
Chair Holvey, not specifically. It didn't come up that I recall. And I think there was some talk that CCB might have to write some rules to kind of further flesh out some of the definitional issues.
Because I know demolition takes a CCB license. It's just there's a lot of components that aren't structural, for example. It may be that we want to ask the CCB of whether they're going to deal with this in rural or whether they already have this figured out.
Yeah, just a comment. Amanda from Senator Schultz's office again. The definition of construction work is fairly broad, but it didn't include the major problem with these fire chasing restoration companies is they advertise to do cleaning work, basically. So we had to narrowly define cleaning work after a disaster to make sure that was under CCB. And it's a CCB endorsement. So the bill makes sure that if you're already CCB licensed, you're covered, you don't have to get anything new. You can, if you want, get the endorsement. But that if you're doing that work, you need to be under CCB endorsement. And I can have Director Denno, he sat through the process, mm-hmm. can have Director Denno either come visit you or the entire committee, whatever.
Well, we can figure that out. I appreciate the offer, though. Not seeing any other questions. Thank you very much for your participation in the work group as well and bringing this bill back. It was, I recall it being a good issue for us to address. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 574. I'm going to stand at ease for just a moment.
Bills?
Yes.
I think which ones were you going to work?
Hang on a second.
Give it lots of work.
I'm going to reconvene the House Committee on Business and Labor, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 371.
Yes.
Nobody's here. We can do what we want. Look at this.
Do you want Jan to read the bill?
Just review.
This is a reminder. This is the bill that deals with the notice that's provided when a workers' comp claim is closed and also provides the interpreter services for the reconsideration proceedings.
This is the one over Mr. Chair, I just would note also it came out of the Senate unanimously and now it's been recommended by IMPACT. Mm-hmm. Or IMLAC.
Major
impact too, maybe. Who knows?
Representative Burton.
Chair Holvey, I move House Senate Bill 371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 371 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Seeing none, Matthew, can we have a roll call?
Representative Beretta.
Aye.
Representative Doherty.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Hurd.
Excused.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Kennedy.
Aye.
Chair
Holden. Aye. Senate Bill 371 is passed. And Representative Evans, would you like to carry that one?
Yes, sir.
And with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 371 and adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor. Adjourn the House Committee on Business and Labor.